Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Trying to figure out what U.S. foreign policy actually is these days is no easy task. There's plenty of hot language. The president says he'll totally destroy nuclear North Korea, suggests there's a storm coming. The State Department looks paralyzed. Secretary Rex Tillerson reportedly calls the president a moron. Republican Senator Bob Corker says the White House is an adult daycare center and worries openly about getting on the path to World War III. This hour on Point, Rex Tillerson, the president he serves, and American foreign policy now. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Washington is Nihal Tusi, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. Nihal, Holly, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So there has been a lot of talk in recent days about Rex Tillerson being on his way out. And then we've got the Senate leader of the Foreign Relations Committee coming out, Bob Corker, and talking about the U.S. at risk of getting on the path to World War III, the adult daycare being necessary at the White House. And in the background to all this, news last week reporting, based, I guess, sourced with several senior officials, that Tillerson called the president a moron over the summer. Does this Secretary of State, first of all, just look secure in his position?
No. I think the simple answer to that is it looks very much like his departure at some point, probably fairly soon, is inevitable. That being said, you know, with Tillerson and Trump, the tensions have been there for a while. They've clashed on any number of issues, including how to deal with North Korea and how to deal with the Iran nuclear deal. But yeah, you know, last week, Tillerson comes out, holds this press conference in reaction to an NBC News report that had said that he had called the president a moron. Mm. And that he had considered quitting his post as Secretary of State. And Tillerson goes out there and holds this press conference and says he's never considered quitting. He says that President Trump is, quote, smart, but he doesn't deny calling him a moron. And to be honest, that kind of just has made things a lot more complicated. Now, a couple of days ago, President Trump told reporters that he and Tillerson have a very good relationship, but that he thinks that Tillerson should just be tougher sometimes. Still, with this kind of clear lack of confidence in his own Secretary of State, it's hard to see how much longer this relationship can really last.
With everything that's on the boil, North Korea, the Iran deal, and some imminent decisions going on there, and then this kind of back and forth with the State Department that has been very thinly staffed. I mean, Rex Tillerson has plenty of critics all on his own or questions about how his management there. But then we get this. This was last Wednesday, a reporter asking the Secretary of State about an NBC report that said he had called President Trump a moron after a July meeting at the Pentagon with members of Trump's national security team and cabinet officials. Here was that exchange.
Could you address the main headline of this story that you called the president a moron? And if not, where do you think these reports or
I'm not going to deal with petty stuff like that. I mean, this is what I don't understand about Washington. Again, you know, I'm not from this place, but the places I come from, we don't deal with that kind of petty nonsense. And it is intended to do nothing but divide people. And I'm just not going to be part of this effort to divide this administration.
Nihal Tusi with Politico, it's at one level, it's hard not to be sympathetic with the Secretary of State who doesn't want to get in to talk about name-calling. It seems so childish, and we have huge national security and foreign relations issues at stake here. On the other hand, if that was an accurate expression of the Secretary's frustration with the White House, it makes one wonder, you know, who's steering the ship, and if we've got a foreign policy that holds together.
Yeah, and the thing is, Rex Tillerson doesn't have a heck of a lot of support either from the White House or from within his own building. So, he comes out there and he says, look, it's too much petty nonsense in Washington. But, I mean, he should know what Washington's about. And a lot of Washington comes down to public relations and how you deal with what's public, not simply how you push deals, privately or behind the scenes. He's a former Exxon CEO, mm-hmm. Exxon CEO, so he has this kind of, belief that he can just do things privately. But the reality is Washington works very differently. And so he can come out there and say, look, I don't want to deal with this petty nonsense. But the fact that he didn't flat out deny calling the president a moron, although the State Department spokeswoman, denied it on his behalf later in the day, that nonetheless is just going to keep people talking in Washington. It's going to further undermine his position. And it's hard to see how much longer he can survive. Of course, this is the Trump administration. And we thought the same thing about Jeff Sessions a few months ago. We thought he was on his way out the door from being Attorney General, but he's still there. So anything is possible. It's just hard to sell. These are not normal times.
Not just PR, I guess. Of course, we had Bob Corker coming out, and the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, senior Republican there, saying that it's tough for Tillerson to lead the actual diplomacy of the country because the president, doesn't have his back. Here he was.
He, from my perspective, is in an incredibly frustrating place where, as I watch, and I can watch very closely on many occasions, he ends up not being supported in the way that I would hope a Secretary of State would be supported.
And then this, with Secretary Tillerson, along with Mattis and the Chief of Staff Kelly, Bob Corker saying this was last Wednesday, just the people separating this country from chaos, he said.
Secretary Tillerson, Secretary Mattis, and Chief of Staff Kelly are those people that help separate our country from chaos.
Okay, Nihal Tosi, is this just political combat between a senior senator and the president, who has been, certainly this weekend, has been very tough on him in tweets? Or is there the sense that we've got a foreign policy that is rocking here? It's an odd situation where you've got such criticism of Tillerson, but then him described as the only thing separating the country from chaos on the foreign policy front. Anyway, you got Mattis and Kelly there too. What about it?
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out a way to describe the events of the last few days, and it's kind of like the movie Mean Girls, but with nuclear weapons. That's kind of how it comes across to me. It's people sniping at each other and tweeting nasty things at each other. But I will say this: Bob Corker is the type of guy who is very careful about what he says. He is measured about what he says. He thinks about it, and he is one of the Republicans who's considered a relative moderate and who has tried over the months to work with President Trump. He's praised him in the past. So for Bob Corker to come out and lash out at the president this way, saying things like he could lead us to World War III, or in his tweet saying that the White House has become an adult daycare center, that tells you something is really, really going awry. And how is that going to translate into how the U.S. deals with foreign policy? Well, one saving grace about this is that people overseas, foreign leaders, they increasingly tell me that they try not to pay attention so much to what the president says, but pay more attention to the actions that he and his National Security Council and diplomats take. And so if you can just separate kind of the sniping from the actual actions, then it gives you a little bit more hope that things are not going to be going to go as awry as people hope. As people think or as people fear. But I will say, I got to add this other aspect of this, which is that there are other parts of the world, like in North Korea, where what the president says and what he tweets really matters a great deal, because we don't have a lot of direct interaction with that particular regime. And so if the North Korean regime takes something that President Trump says as the potential that the U.S. is going to attack them or something, there could be this really ugly scene that develops afterward if they misunderstand something, and it could lead to a conflict inadvertently. And that's the real danger here, is not necessarily there's going to be some intentional conflict that we're going to get in, but like an inadvertent accidental one.
Do we have substantive differences then right now between the White House and State Department on North Korea, and for that matter on Iran? Describe what's right ahead there now.
Right. So on North Korea, there are definite differences. Tillerson really wants to take a more diplomatic approach. He wants to have contact with the North Korean regime. He wants to talk them down and try to bring this nuclear threat under control. The White House and H.R. McMaster, the National Security Advisor in particular, and apparently the president, too, from what we can tell in his tweets, they want to take more punitive actions, everything from, you know, enhancing sanctions to doing a number of other things to try to keep this nuclear threat from becoming an even bigger one. They don't like the idea of diplomacy so much, or at least they publicly say that they don't want to talk to the North Koreans right now. So that's become like a flashpoint between these two power centers. On the Iran nuclear deal, Tillerson has, you know, among others, has advised the president to go ahead and certify that the Iranians are upholding their end of the nuclear deal, which is something that international inspectors and U.S. allies overseas say is the case. But the president does not want to give Iran that satisfaction, and he is leaning toward decertifying Iranian compliance, which wouldn't pull the U.S. out of the nuclear deal immediately, but which could really have a lot of ugly reverberations. And it, you know, depending on how things flow in Congress, could lead Congress to push back and put sanctions back on Iran, which could lead to the implosion of the nuclear deal down the line.
Meanwhile, what about the State Department and the staff there, where the work is supposed to get done, I guess, with all of this country's relations with so many governments abroad?
Well, you know, the question sometimes now is what State Department? You know, this is a building where the vast majority of leadership positions, we're talking assistant secretaries, undersecretaries, top people who can make decisions, those positions are not filled. They're being held on a temporary basis by people who don't really have a lot of power and can't really make decisions. That being said, there are tons of decisions to be made, and a lot of that has become centralized in Tillerson's office, which means that a lot of decisions are taking a very, very long time to make. Things are slow. There aren't people to talk to. And Tillerson and a handful of top aides seem basically cloistered in their seventh floor offices. And they just aren't in touch with the rest of the building, which is deeply frustrating to U.S. diplomats.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking this hour at the Secretary of State and his president as Bob Corker, senior Senate Republican, chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, says President Trump is putting the country on the path to, potentially, World War III. Pretty amazing language there. You can join us this hour. What do you think? If the White House is toying with a path that could mean World War III, Bob Corker says, is Rex Tillerson's State Department capable of calming the boat? Is this former ExxonMobil CEO up to that job? Do we have a Tillerson problem? You know, not filling posts, not using his own department? Do we have a White House problem on foreign policy here? Or is this the kind of American profile in foreign affairs that you want to see? Last Wednesday, after the Secretary of State gave his kind of non-denial about the moron comment, bleeping moron in July, the president said he was honored by Tillerson's remarks last week and called the NBC report fake. NBC says they got that report from three official sources who knew the incident. Here was the president in Las Vegas last Wednesday.
It was fake news. It was a totally phony story. Thank you very much. It was made up. It was made up by NBC. They just made it up. Thank you all. Thank you. Total confidence in Rex.
Total confidence in Rex. Stakes? High. I mean, this was Thursday, pre-dinner photo session with top military advisors and their spouses at the White House, and President Trump with his cryptic remark about calm before the storm.
You guys know what this represents?
Well, I remember it's
the calm before the storm.
What's the storm?
Could be the calm. Calm before the storm.
What storm is
this? We have the world's great military people in this room. We'll tell you that. And we're going to have a great evening. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
What storm, Mr. President?
You'll find out.
Calm before the storm. He repeats it twice there. That sound is very muddy, but with everything going on, particularly on the North Korean front, maybe Iran for that matter, people paying close attention, and to the president's relationship with the Secretary of State. Nahal Tusi covers foreign affairs for Politico, and she's with us from Washington. Right now with us as well is Max Boot, senior fellow at the National Security Studies in National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. In late August, he published a piece in Foreign Policy with the headline, "Time is Up," on Rex Tillerson. You can link to that at our website, onpointradio.org. Max Boot, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So already in August, you were putting up some pretty big flares of concern about the Secretary of State. Now we've got this stuff that's come out in public between Rex Tillerson and the president, Bob Corker, talking about the country being put on a path to World War III. What's going on with our foreign policy establishment, if we can even use that word today, Max?
Well, it's not clear what the foreign policy of the United States is beyond the tweets of President Trump, which are erratic and alarming. Rex Tillerson has not managed to make a real impact, and he has become, you know, certainly the most ineffectual Secretary of State I've ever seen, and quite possibly the most ineffectual Secretary of State ever. There are people in the Trump national security circle, like Jim Mattis, who have been fairly effective in managing Trump and not getting caught up in all of his craziness. But that doesn't describe Tillerson. He has been, completely out of his depth. He has not been able to make an impact on Trump. He often seems to be at odds with the president, and the president regularly undercuts him in public in ways that destroy his credibility and effectiveness. But Tillerson also has not been effective in managing his own building, which is one thing that I thought he could do as a former ExxonMobil CEO. You'd think he'd know how to manage an organization, yet he's been dreadful. I mean, morale is in the State Department is rock bottom. He hasn't filled many of the senior ranks. He has not inspired his personnel. He also has not reached out to the media. He has not reached out to lawmakers. This is a man with no constituency in Washington, and for that reason, I think it's widely expected that Rexit is going to occur sooner rather than later.
If you wanted to point to, if he's ineffectual, point to the policy terms in which you see that as being the case.
Well, he's been at odds with the president over issues like Qatar, for example, where Trump has been supportive of the Saudi coalition, which has been at odds with Qatar, whereas Tillerson has attempted to play the honest broker. Tillerson has attempted to open negotiations with North Korea and has been undercut by Trump in public. And Tillerson is said to be in favor of staying within the Iran nuclear deal, something that Trump is said to be on the verge of pulling out of. So on issue after issue, what Tillerson stands for does not line up with what Trump stands for. And this is truly unprecedented. We've never seen a situation like this where there is so much room between the Secretary of State in public and the President of the United States. And so that makes it impossible for Tillerson to do his job effectively.
Rex Tillerson talking about opening or trying to open a channel to North Korea. The president, of course, tweeting he's wasting his time trying to negotiate with Little Rocket Man. Save your energy, Rex. We'll do what has to be done. Sort of calm before the storm talk right there. But Max Boot, is it so unusual for a Secretary of State to be at odds or in tension with foreign policy views in the White House? It's not the first time we've seen that, is it?
It's the first time we've seen it this publicly because, you know, Trump does not believe in doing things behind closed doors. He puts his thoughts out there on Twitter for the whole world to see. And certainly, there's no question there have been previous instances of secretaries of state and presidents at odds over various issues. But normally you learn about that after the fact, or maybe you learn about it at the time from leaks, but you don't hear it, you know, coming so publicly and blatantly from the president of the United States, making clear that he has no trust or confidence as his own Secretary of State, like that tweet you just read about, you know, give it a rest, Rex, you know, we'll do what has to be done, don't bother negotiating. I mean, there's never been anything like that. I'm a historian. I think I can pretty confidently say this is historically unprecedented.
What about Senator Corker and the way he's come into the middle of this? Do you look at that as just political combat between Bob Corker and Donald Trump, or he's chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee? Is this a studied perception, judgment of what's going on when he talks about adult daycare and when he talks about putting us on at risk or getting on the path to World War III. Is this emotion flaring, or is this a judicious assessment?
Well, I think it's pretty telling that President Trump's own supporters and appointees are describing him as a moron, as a guy who's basically senile and leading us into World War III. I mean, this is what people who are on his side or have been on his side are saying. So, you know, I think that vindicates those of us who have been more critical of Trump, because I think what you're seeing with these comments from Corker and Tillerson is a window into what Trump's own appointees and Republican lawmakers on the Hill, what they actually think about this guy, because I can guarantee you these are not isolated thoughts. In fact, Corker himself said that pretty much every member of the Senate Republican caucus agrees with him in private. So this is, again, completely unprecedented, because you have certainly had instances before where a president has been at odds with his own party. I mean, for example, one thinks back to one of Tillerson's illustrious predecessors as chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, J. William Fulbright, who in the mid-1960s found himself at odds with Lyndon Johnson over the Vietnam War. I mean, that was startling enough, but that was a policy disagreement. There was no suggestion from Senator Fulbright that Lyndon Johnson was incapable of acting as commander-in-chief. Nobody would have said such a thing. But that is, in fact, what Senator Corker is saying about his commander-in-chief, a guy who had considered making him the vice president or, you know, making him secretary of state. And now Corker is saying that Trump is not qualified to be commander-in-chief, that it's a danger to the world to have this guy in charge of the nuclear arsenal. Again, completely unprecedented. And yet, I would argue, completely appropriate, because the only thing that's inappropriate here is that Corker's colleagues are keeping silent, that they are not speaking out because they know what he's saying is true, and they are too cowardly to speak the truth in public.
Well, let's ask about that truth, though, of what Corker's saying. We know the president uses colorful, even wild language in his tweets, but when Senator Corker talks about the president being at risk of putting the country on the path to World War III, is that hyperbole? Americans may listen and shrug it off and say, oh, come on. Or is there a scenario where he's not kidding?
Okay, maybe World War III is a little bit hyperbole, but certainly a nuclear war with North Korea, yes, absolutely. Trump is making a nuclear war with North Korea much more likely with his deranged threats and tweets and put-downs of Kim Jong-un. You know, he keeps hinting that he's about to order military strikes, and at the same time, the U.S. military is acting more aggressively on the Korean Peninsula with B-1s and fighter aircraft doing overflights north of the DMZ along the coastline of North Korea. It's not hard to imagine a scenario under which Kim Jong-un, you know, hears these threats of military action coming from Donald Trump, who has threatened to destroy his country, and at the same time sees the U.S. military heading for his country, and he could miscalculate. He could decide to shoot down a U.S. aircraft or fire missiles at Guam, do something like that, which would then force Trump to retaliate in turn. And it's not hard to imagine the chain of events that leads to a nuclear exchange shortly down the road. So, yes, this is a real danger, and Trump really is increasing the risk of nuclear war with North Korea. Corker is absolutely right about that.
White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway on Fox News, Fox and Friends today, calling Corker incredibly irresponsible. Here she was.
We've all worked with Senator Corker over the years. We thank him for his service, but I find tweets like this to be incredibly irresponsible. It adds to the insulting that the mainstream media and the president's detractors, almost a year after this election, they still can't accept the election results.
But here's Corker, Republican, remember, last week, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, talking about Rex Tillerson in the tough spot that Corker says Tillerson's been in.
I think he's in a very trying situation, trying to solve many of the world's problems a lot of times without the kind of support and help that I'd like to see him have.
Did he ever think about resigning at any point in time?
I can't get into that.
Can't get into that. But he, among those, Corker said, protecting the U.S. from chaos at this point. Danny in Tampa, Florida. Danny, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I think Bob Corker and your guests right now that you're talking to are 100% correct. This was my biggest fear of all, Donald Trump, when he became president, that he would put us on the brink of nuclear war. And I'm telling you right now, that unless, and there's no way I don't believe that you can put the 25th Amendment there, he had to have his party to go along with it to go ahead and invoke the 25th Amendment and remove him. I think that in this case, this man is like a Humphrey Bogart in the Caine Mutiny. He is like Vincent Price in a TV movie. This man is dangerous. And unless we have a mutiny in this country, I believe that we are all on the brink. And this is my biggest fear, that he will do it. In one of his emotional moments, he will go ahead and he'll do it. And he couldn't care less, and he would do it out of joy, not out of spite.
Danny, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more. Julie in Austin, Texas. Julie, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Julie.
I completely agree with the last caller and your guest as well. I think we need to remember, America needs to remember that Trump is a snake oil salesman. He took on the Republican brand to get into office. He didn't even start out as a Republican. He said, I remember the quote, the Republicans are nice to me. So,
I mean, you say snake oil salesman, Julie, but a lot of people saw him, you know, not lining up with the Republican orthodoxy and still voted for him.
Yes, and unfortunately, that's the skill that a salesman like that has, is to charm people long enough to close the deal.
Julie, I appreciate your call as well. We're looking at American foreign policy in a time when there's, some pretty incredible exchanges going on around us. Max Boot is with us from New York. Nahal Tussi is with us from Politico. Nahal, I'm looking here at a headline this morning. This is Kathleen Hunter, Bloomberg, saying foreign policy mutiny closes in on Trump. And she's talking about among fellow Republicans. Do you see that, Nahal?
I think one of the things that's going to be fascinating to watch is how many people line up behind Bob Corker. He said, you know, that pretty much everybody in the Senate Republican caucus feels the same way that he does. Well, I can assure you that if I run into any of those members, or if my fellow reporters do, we're going to be asking questions like, do you agree with Bob Corker about President Trump's state of mind, whether he's fit, whether he's going to lead us into World War III? And how these Republicans react is going to say a lot about where they stand on President Trump and how much President Trump can do on foreign policy with or without their support.
I want to bring Andrew Steinfeld into our conversation. Career diplomat, spent 36 years in senior level posts at the U.S. Department of State, Pentagon, in the Middle East, South Asia, Europe, Africa, served over a dozen secretaries of state from the Carter administration to the Obama, retiring just last August. Last position, he was foreign policy advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Joins us from Washington. Andrew Steinfeld, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
In the midst of this kind of rocking boat action, what's your assessment of the Secretary of State and how he's carrying the mission of the Department of State, at least as it's been defined?
Well, that's a very good question. I've been thinking a lot about that, and I think it's always nice to go back to the founding fathers. I found a wonderful quote. John Adams was writing a friend of his around 1800, and he said, "What are the qualifications of a Secretary of State? He ought to be a man of universal reading in laws, governments, history. Our whole terrestrial universe ought to be summarily comprehended in his mind." So that's a nice model to judge all our secretaries of state.
Does the ExxonMobil CEO, former, have that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's been a lot written about whether he has. Right. He certainly knows the world, but he knows the world, I would say, from a very narrow perspective of business, of cutting deals in shady places like Equatorial Guinea, his whole relationship with Russia, which Max has pointed out in some of his writing, is worthy of note. But what I always find interesting is we would never put a senior diplomat as the head of a Fortune 500 company, nor would we put a head of a Fortune 500 company as the head of the Pentagon. Or as the chairman, or as a general.
I don't know. I remember Robert McNamara. Hard to say never.
That's true. But what I'm saying is that there seems to be a view, both with our ambassadors in the field and now with Rex Tillerson, that diplomacy is something that anyone can just pick up and fill. And I, as a career diplomat, I don't buy that. I
mean, is there damage being done to the State Department, to our foreign policy?
I think absolutely. I've been, you know, as you said, I left a year ago, but I'm in close touch with some colleagues. They have come very reluctantly, actually, to the conclusion that he's kind of decimating the department. Now, whether it's out of spite or malice or whether it's just a byproduct of a kind of ham-fisted approach to reform is a question. But as people have pointed out already, none of the senior positions have been filled. The critical positions at state are the assistant secretaries for the regional bureaus, mm-hmm. and none of those have been filled yet. So that's a real issue. He's also working on attrition. A lot of senior officials who should have another 10 years ahead of them are deciding to leave.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are looking this hour at the Secretary of State and his president, as senior Senate Republican Bob Corker says President Trump is putting the country at risk of World War III. Max Boot is with us, senior fellow for National Security Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, author of the forthcoming The Road Not Taken. Nahal Tusi is with us, foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. Andrew Steinfeld is here, career diplomat, spent 36 years in the State Department, retiring just last August. His last position, foreign policy advisor to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Last Wednesday, after the moron comments came out. And on the one hand, you don't want to make too much of that, as he said, petty. On the other hand, here he was saying that he denying reports that he had thought of leaving the administration.
The vice president has never had to persuade me to remain as Secretary of State because I have never considered leaving this post. I value the friendship and the counsel of the vice president, and I admire his leadership within President Trump's administration to address the many important agendas of President Trump, both from a foreign policy perspective and a domestic objective.
Okay. All right. Then Saturday night, as he was heading off to a campaign event in North Carolina, the president took some questions on the White House lawn. He said, speaking for himself and his chief of staff, John Kelly, he played down the differences, the president said, between Secretary Tillerson and the White House.
No, he likes Secretary Tillerson, so do I. We have a very good relationship. We disagree in a couple of things. Sometimes I'd like him to be a little bit tougher, but other than that, we have a very good relationship.
This is a very good relationship. Okay, Arlen in Austin, Texas. Arlen, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I served in positions of responsibility through the Cold War, dealing with nuclear and those kinds of things. And I want to agree with your guests and your callers in large measure. And I do want to say that I think that things are dire, understanding what Senator Corker said about managing Trump and keeping him in the middle of the road. And therefore, I believe that there's a point of max leverage that exists between the three generals and the globally experienced Secretary of State, that if they maintain a front with the president, they can prevent us going down these roads that lead to absolute disaster.
So you're confident, you're comfortable.
I'm comfortable with those managers as long as they maintain a front with the president, because they have leverage now. If they split, if they go different directions, or even if they are noncommittal, it's not good enough. And really, our democracy in a lot of ways depends on it.
I appreciate your call, Arlen. Max Boot, what about it? We had Bob Corker saying, you know, these three guys, General Mattis, John Kelly, Tillerson, protecting the country from chaos right now, and our callers ready to trust in that, are you?
Well, I don't think that Secretary Tillerson has been as influential in that task as he might be. I think the ones who have been influential are Jim Mattis, John Kelly, and H.R. McMaster. I think those are really the three individuals who are standing between us and disaster, and in particular, Jim Mattis, because, as you know, any use of force emanating from the White House is going to have to go through the Secretary of Defense. And, you know, going back to the days of the Nixon administration when then Secretary of Defense Jim Schlesinger basically let people in the chain of command know that if Nixon was off his rocker and decided to launch nuclear weapons, they'd better check with Secretary Schlesinger before complying with that order. You know, I would hope that Secretary Mattis has said something very similar to the military chain of command today, because as Senator Corker's comments have pointed out, nobody really thinks that Trump is a responsible commander-in-chief, a responsible steward of our military forces, in particular our nuclear arsenal. And we are really counting on the sanity of those generals around him to prevent him from bumbling into utter catastrophe.
Yeah, let me just take you entirely literally and seriously at you know, your words at face value there. Is that a tolerable situation for us to be counting on your hope? You said you really hope that Mattis will play that role. Is this a tolerable situation for this country, Max?
I don't think it is a tolerable situation. I don't think that Donald Trump should have been president. And I think everything he's done in his first year in office has shown how unfit he is for the highest office in the land. And I wish and hope, but have scant expectation, that people like Bob Corker and many others on Capitol Hill who understand how unqualified and how dangerous he is as commander-in-chief will begin impeachment proceedings. I mean, this is why we have the impeachment proceedings within the Constitution. It's not just for a president who breaks the law. It's also high crimes and misdemeanors can be construed any way that Congress would like. And I believe the president has broken the law. I believe he has committed obstruction of justice by firing FBI Director Jim Comey. But the larger issue is that he has just shown himself utterly unfit to discharge his office. And the fact that he remains in office, I think, places our country and the world at risk. And I wish that Congress would step in and remove him. But of course, there's scant chance that a Republican-dominated House and Senate will do any such thing.
Chris in Omaha, Nebraska. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm okay. What do you see, Chris?
Well, what I see is the United States has the largest military in the history of militaries in the entire world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just an obvious fact.
Yep.
And North Korea doesn't. So, I mean, Trump's just, you know, stating the obvious that, you know, I have the largest nuclear weapons arsenal in the history of the world. Kim Jong, I'm sorry, man, but, you know, you can't act the way you're acting. You know, you have to do the United States bidding. And, you know, he is projecting the obvious. So, and I'm thinking that he's doing what I would probably do in the same situation. No, I'm not a career politician. I'm not
yep.
a diplomat.
Yep.
But, you know, as a lay person, it's obvious. You know, we won before a war even started with them.
Chris, let us pick it up right there, and Nahal, I'll come first to you. I mean, Chris says, look, the president is playing the cards he's got, and Chris, I think Chris is on to something here. He's fairly well articulated what seems to be, and even Rex Tillerson, I think, has articulated this, that they saw the Obama years as not effectively deploying American strength, and they want to return to that, sort of bluntly, just put it out there. Does Chris got it? Right, but I mean, you could be right and still end up in nuclear war and in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing about Kim Jong-un is that his number one concern is survival. And to him, that means he has to have a nuclear arsenal. And because he views the United States as his number one threat. And so this idea that, you know, President Trump can just say, hey, look, you have to do our bidding, that's just not going to work with a guy like Kim Jong-un. And so, no, I mean, it's one of those things. Yeah, but I will say, like, look, any president would have a difficult time with the North Korea issue. President Obama had a difficult time. President Bush had a difficult time. And it's gotten to a point where even if it was, you know, a different president right now, they would still be having very, very hard choices to make about how to deal with this regime in North Korea. So in a sense, Trump has been handed something that, you know, it's just a very, very challenging problem. But the idea that you can just simply tell the guy off or, you know, say something on Twitter and that he'll just line up and do whatever you want just because you have a large military, if anything, it just feeds the guy's paranoia and leads him to think, you know what, maybe I need a few more nuclear bombs.
Andrew Steinfeld, what about Chris in Omaha? His view here is kind of saying, look, let's not be fancy pants here. The chips are down. It's time to be blunt. And he sees the president effectively doing that. Andrew.
Yeah, look, I think that's it's a valid point up to a point. But I think if you look particularly at the Korea situation, and that's what we're looking at. I mean, I visited Seoul several times with Chairman Dempsey and Chairman Dunford. And, mm-hmm. you know, the DMZ is about a half-hour car ride from 35 million people. Mm-hmm. And we all know about all the artillery and all the rest. I mean, we need to be very careful about anything that could lead to war in a region that's not our own. I mean, you know, watching the Vietnam series on PBS is a mm-hmm. reminder of how easy it can be, it seems, for the United States to wage a war elsewhere. And, you know,
that cost us 58,000 Americans and, in the end, a loss.
And exactly. And there are a lot of Americans in Korea, let alone all the South Koreans.
Yes.
And obviously, what we need is we need to be completely at one with the South Koreans and the Japanese as we figure out how to deal with Kim Jong-un. And that's apparently what Rex Tillerson was trying to do, and then totally undercut by that tweet from the president.
You've got the Tokyo governor today, Yuriko Koike, who people talk about could be the first female prime minister of Japan, asking about meditating publicly on the stability of the Trump White House today. And of course, she's right on the front line there. Bob in Centerville, Maryland. Bob, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I'm a big supporter of Tillerson and what he's trying to do in here, but at the same time, what is the alternate? If he is successful, is that likely to prevent North Korea from being a nuclear power?
So are you saying, Bob, you're supportive of him trying to find a diplomatic channel?
Why aren't we being honest that we've been trying to find a diplomatic channel mm-hmm. for years, and there's less than 1% chance that we're going to find it in the rest of the way. This guy who is head of North Korea has sacrificed these people already for this. He's yep. going to sacrifice them more until he reaches that status.
Bob, we've got it, and we'll look at it. Max Boot, Chris in Omaha says we've got a big military. Let's not be shy about putting it right out there. Bob in Maryland is skeptical about the diplomatic channel. What are you thinking as you listen to these observations, Max?
Well, I do not believe that diplomacy will lead North Korea to give up its nuclear arsenal, because that is such a core objective for Kim Jong-un, and he knows that his regime's survival depends on having that nuclear deterrent. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that the alternative to diplomacy is war. I mean, think about the way we handled the Soviet Union, which had a much larger nuclear arsenal than North Korea does. Mm-hmm. Nobody talked about a preemptive nuclear strike preemptive military strike on the Soviet Union being a good thing. Everybody understood how suicidal that would be. And instead, we relied on deterrence and containment, basically waiting out the Soviet Union, making clear to them that if they crossed certain red lines, if they invaded Western Europe, we would go to war. But if they didn't do that, we weren't going to attack them. And we would just wait for them to collapse of their own internal contradictions. That's the policy that we need to be following with North Korea, because it is one of the poorest, most dysfunctional states in the world. It will not last forever. We just need to wait it out. In the meantime, we need to avoid blundering into a nuclear war. But unfortunately, the kind of talk that you heard from your caller or from the Trump White House makes it more likely that we will, in fact, stumble into a war that nobody wants. And with loss of life possibly far larger than it was during the Vietnam War. So, diplomacy is not a panacea, but preemptive strikes aren't going to work either. We just need to wait them out. That's the policy that I think is the most effective one.
Now, what's the thinking about Rex Tillerson's thinking, as he has not filled all these positions? I mean, as Max reminds us, we're looking at this crisis in Northeast Asia, with no Undersecretary of State for Arms Control, International Security, or for East Asia, no ambassador in Seoul. Looking at Afghanistan, no Assistant Secretary of State for South Asia. Andrew Steinfeld saying these regional positions are so important. Policy on Iraq and Syria with no Assistant Secretary of State for the Near East. For Venezuela, no Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere. What's the operating theory of the former ExxonMobil chief here, as far as we can see, Nahal?
Well, there's a couple of things. He wants to reorganize the department, and he wants to cut its budget. He thinks it's too bloated. Now, this is something people will vehemently disagree with, the budget part. But
we don't need region expertise? That's...
Well, see, that's the thing, though. He wants to reorganize the department before filling many of these positions. But I don't think he calculated.
We've got issues.
That's the thing. He didn't quite realize how long it was going to take to get all that done. And the world doesn't stop spinning, and things don't stop happening just because you want to have a reorganization plan in place. And that's what he's learning. And so now there's all this stuff happening, and you don't have points of contact for people overseas at the State Department. So instead, they're just often bypassing the State Department in general, turning to the Pentagon, going to the White House, because they just don't see state as being the primal focus of U.S. foreign policy anymore.
Andrew Steinfeld, do you see long-term damage to U.S. foreign policy with the State Department moves, or do you see a more efficient State Department which could go in good new directions post-Rex Tillerson or with Rex Tillerson?
Look, I was hoping as I looked at this from a year out to look at it slightly more positively. But after some discussions with colleagues who are either in the department or have just left, it's a pretty dire situation. And one colleague went so far as to say that there is a view among Rex Tillerson and particularly some of his senior aides that the State Department represents the so-called deep state. And this colleague of mine who's recently retired said there wasn't a deep state, but they're certainly helping to create one now. And what that means is that there is a real demoralization of the Foreign Service, of the expertise of people like myself who spend our whole lives in and out of the State Department, in and out of places like Afghanistan and Pakistan, and a lot of senior people who should be staying another 6, 8, 10 years are either finding themselves pushed out or they're leaving on their own. And that's a real tragedy for what the State Department should be doing to serve the nation.
Max Boot, we just got 20 seconds. How much time do we have to get things back on an even keel?
The time is now. I mean, every month that goes by with this dysfunctional presidency, I think, puts the U.S. deeper in a hole and increases the danger to us.
Well, Bob Corker is certainly talking in that way. Of course, he's got his issues with the president, but still, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Republican, and Rex Tillerson, who knows what kind of timeline he's on. As Corker says, he's one of the handful protecting us from chaos here. What a scene. Max Boot at the Council on Foreign Relations, thank you very much for being with us today, Max. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Nahal Tusi at Politico. Thank you, Nahal.
Thank you.
And Andrew Steinfeld, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.